Welcome to Anti-Capitalist Radio. This podcast features two articles. The first is Be Realistic, Demand the Impossible by Rowan Fortune, NJ Catchpole, and Twilight O'Hara. And the second is a statement by Anti-Capitalist Resistance and Transmission on the Cass Review. Both can be found on the Anti-Capitalist Resistance website. Be Realistic, Demand the Impossible. The trans struggle has reached a crisis. Some will be tempted to temper our expectations and make more moderate demands. In this essay, Rowan Fortune, NJ Catchpole, and Twilight O'Hara explain why that is a quick route to defeat. Trigger warning. This piece includes a difficult discussion of trans suicide and depression in candid terms. Quote, only by demanding from bourgeois society all that it is capable of granting have we succeeded here and there in obtaining a small part. Rosa Luxemburg. In the wake of the Cass Review, a barely disguised political attack on transhumanity, we have seen our community suffer as trans people from Britain and the US. We understand well the temptation to retreat in the face of such brazen hate, but we know what the outcome of that response has been historically, further defeat. The dehumanized can do nothing to appease their dehumanizers except cease to exist, which is why we hope our community will do the opposite. We must adopt a program of minimal accommodation, maximal existence. We have nothing to gain from anything less. Yet, it can never be so simple. Ours is a community so defined by trauma that one of the most popular dog whistles against us, 41%, refers to a 2011 statistic regarding attempted suicide amongst trans youth in the United States. In the UK, two-thirds have reported depression. We are besieged by hate, unprotected from torture in the guise of conversion or exploratory therapy, with increasingly limited access to life-saving transition healthcare. How could anything but such dire rates of suicidality and depression be the result? As trans people, we know the precarity of our community, which has only ever partially become a political movement. We know that many trans people have experienced a sharp downward class mobility, which can leave them shell-shocked or even nihilistic. Neither mental state is a firm foundation for organizing. Indeed, these circumstances have too often given rise to the cheap, fake recompense of moralism, to self-hatred in the guise of trans medicalist views, i.e. that only binary, medicalized trans people count, in petty divisions between trans masks and femmes, in allowing cis society to pathologize our genders and selfhoods in dysphoria diagnoses. Despite this, we still share the conviction that trans liberation can achieve gains at speed, albeit not alone and only after changes to the essence of our struggle. Among the greatest obstacles standing in the way of once again being a movement capable of winning are the various mechanisms our community has adopted to cope with defeat. In short, we must change ourselves to change the world. As every trans person knows, whether they seek medical interventions or not, changing ourselves happens in worldly ways, via sensuous, profoundly felt and embodied methods. We insist that we must stand up and fight together, and do so in such a way that makes us into the very movement and people capable of winning. Trans care. Nevertheless, there is a tension in trans life that must be attended to, one that requires an awareness of nuance that is too often lacking. A tension between intense vulnerability and of needing to insist on our joyful existence. Between euphoria and dysphoria, between the world we want and the one where we reside. It is in this textured, liminal reality trans life persists. We share the belief that any pathway to sustainable models of care and resistance for us cannot neglect or solely emphasize either dimension, but must tackle the messier effects of trans life and survival and then how that becomes socially organized and powerful. Such a focus is neither about a myth of trans power nor a surrender to trans despair. Rather, it must be to insist that for most trans people, those not buttressed by wealth, the baseline of life is inherently and explicitly political. It is political in ways that socially and sensuously alienate our everyday lives, not only from a prescribed normality, but even from our own selves. We do not accept that the cisgender mental health crisis is a generally good framework for the experience of trans people in our crisis. Our depressions and pains, which are often also neurodivergent and poorly catered to at multiple levels of social provision, cannot be managed out of existence by institutionalized models of care that are only secondarily, as an afterthought, about us. Many wrongly assume that suicidality is always a consequence of biomedical mental health issues. For people who are denied any means by which to exist as themselves, to be accepted in who they are at the most foundational levels, such a perspective ignores the calculations and pretexts of trans suicidality. As trans people, we do not benefit from being told that our depressions arise from a failure of our reasoning. Our depressions are a consequence of a failure in cisgendered society. We are not fighting over principle, but over the contours of life itself, our lives. Depression is how we understand our stakes. A framework that is more illuminating than mental health is one of shared trauma, which operates as a blockage to self-development and sometimes life. All depression is political, but the mere rolling out of accessible existing treatments for such mental health problems cannot heal trans people. We must be given a hand in remaking care on our terms. We need the uniqueness of ourselves and traumas embedded in the rich practices of care. We must radically assert our humanity because until it is recognized by others, a shocking number of us live in states where suicide becomes the organic outlet for our impossible situations. Trans suicide is always to be prevented, but the terms on which it occurs reveal the extent to which there can be no accommodation to the social conditions that make this course painfully common. That situation is why we cannot merely patch together reliable alternatives to trans care in the also precarious web of T4T or trans for trans relationships and queer spaces, however prefiguratively significant and imperfectly vital. As long as trans people are marginalized, our attempts at survival are limited. Will operate against often untenable conditions. This is not unique to trans existence, but it is an overwhelming feature of it. By trying to appease our oppressors, we inadvertently perform their tasks for them. By some measures, this is even grimly rational. How do we expect to preserve trans lives if some of us fail to respect our fundamental dignity? Just as we can see small concessions by raising the most extreme demands, we can only retain our integrity as human beings by doing so. To lay claim to less than the whole of our humanity is to surrender the whole of our humanity. In Anti-Capitalist Resistance's reply to Cass, co-production is mentioned twice in our demands. This was not a mere nod to the Disabled People's Movement, or better but still inadequate, only an acknowledgement of intersectional links between trans liberation and disabled people's liberation. Co-production must be at the heart of trans liberation because only co-production can bring such care into being. We posit it as having the potential to be the driving philosophy animating trans liberation because presently, trans care is simply not a reality. We make do with cis care as best we can. All of our care is designed to cater to cisness, to norms that do violence to us, to expectations that are not ours, to a model of healing that is often experienced as a form of conversion therapy. Trans care is an idea we must make real through trans resistance, an idea long overdue. Reform and revolution. In a context where trans care is not real, trans people are often wounded, traumatized, precarious, atomized individuals learning each day how best to endure as we undergo transitions that also frequently make us more emotionally and physically vulnerable. We are vulnerable because the stakes are ourselves, often at the level of our flesh and blood. Glib talk of trans power and the stock of performative optimism common to the left cannot reliably engage everyday trans life, nor counter a human inclination from trans people to seek certainties wherever they can, even in the systems that hurt us. When you are drowning, you grab hold of whatever can prevent you from sinking. It is true that full liberation for us, as for all of the oppressed, entails a revolution that can also break the logic of the gender binary, of misogyny, of racism, of disablism, because all of this serves to sustain class society. Nevertheless, trans life cannot wait for revolution before it secures even the fundamental necessities of existence as a socially defined group. Nor is the case for revolution made more convincing when many adherents of it are themselves enmeshed in transphobia, when the left remains infested by prejudice. A problem that requires an entirely different focus, but focus all the same. As trans people and as revolutionaries, we cannot help but appreciate why One Solution Revolution is such a hollow rallying cry for many of our communities struggling, as we are too, in the here and now. Why it feels insulting to be told to look to a labour movement whose unions are often led by bigots, whose histories are often defined by an impoverished comprehension of class that excludes us alongside the broader oppressed. While there are many revolutionary trans people, it should come as no surprise that many also shun the left and prefer either to trust in liberalism, in the false promises of piecemeal reforms irrespective of the demonstrative failures of that process, or give up hope and live in the moment in a fearful holding pattern. Socialists must bolster the autonomous self-organization of trans people to win the trust of the community, and they must do so in ways that deliver tangible victories. But equally, as trans people ourselves, we believe that we should be honest to other trans folk and make the case for why a revolutionary trans liberation movement is the right basis on which to organize. Because we equally share the belief that our current predicament, while not helped by a left too slow to notice trans life, was reached by the prevailing systems in power in our national context, which always need linking globally, by democratic capitalist states. Foremost, contrary to the vulgar idea of a One Solution Revolution, this basis should not be considered all or nothing. It is our claim that by demanding a great deal, we can obtain the pieces that make life more generally livable. The political class will give us speedier diagnoses when we robustly demand none. They will try granting us better healthcare when we demand co-productive healthcare parity. When we defend our communities ourselves, they will spontaneously see the moral outrage of the violence done to us on the streets. This is how the powerful operate. They make concessions to a strong movement that's making the most robust and ambitious demands to break and confuse that movement, to splinter those within its leadership who are socially better positioned. A revolutionary footing, however, gives us the organizational capacity to keep demanding even as they offer tempting bribes. It gives us the networks of prefigurative care to maintain one another through the challenges. In dribs and drabs, we thereby secure the basics to endure, through condescending allowances that they will later claim as signs of their beneficence, progressiveness, and paternal solidarity. Against them, we remember they gave us nothing, and we fought for every scrap as every oppressed movement won every social good they were ever gifted from on high. We thereby remember that we will continue to win through our actions alone, and use those victories to bolster ourselves and persist in demanding for more until there is no further demand to be made, because our humanity is finally and fully acknowledged alongside cishumanity. The ultimatum. In this, we echo the humanist words of our black sisters in the Combahee River Collective Statement of 1974, whose demand for black women's liberation remained to be fulfilled in the context of a racist and misogynist US society and culture. Quote, "To be recognized as human, levelly human, is enough." The cultural mainstream will always give a group they marginalize significantly less than we demand. If they were inclined to deal with us in good faith, they would not marginalize us to begin with. If we demand only a tiny part of our liberation, they will give us nothing. We are punished for our failure to imagine all that is possible. Pessimism is always self-fulfilling. That was the era of making mild Gender Recognition Act reform the British centerpiece of trans resistance in 2018. It was the mistake of trusting Joe Biden's promises to back transhumanity in 2021, before his presidency oversaw the worst period for trans life in recent history. We behaved as though we were not worthy of more, of full healthcare, of complete social recognition, of protection from routine violence, and they met our lack of ambition with their typical attacks. The weak request to an establishment that barely recognized us as worthy of acknowledgement kickstarted the current backlash against trans existence, with a deluge of media nonsense spouted about how self-ID is an existential threat to purely reactionary notions of our women. Meanwhile, our voices were erased. Likewise, in our dealings on the radical left, two of the authors of this piece, Twy and Rowan, feel that we too often accommodated cis apathy. We stand by our framing, but we ought to have pushed harder. ACR presented a welcoming home to us, but our attempts to engage the rest of the left to think deeply about the trans crisis were not met by enthusiasm or even sincere understanding. We sensed this disaster at least 2 years ago, but accepted the miserable role of Cassandra. We too felt the urge to moderate our perspectives, an urge Cass has erased. Too many cis people cannot see Cass for what it is, because in their minds, they have already compromised on recognizing transhumanity. The Cass review is not a qualitative break for them, merely a quantitative one. We must make clear what is at stake: ourselves, their friends and families' souls. The trans movement asked for the scraps under the table, so they promptly decided that we are easily dismissed. We need to demand the table. And that genuinely means we, as trans brothers, sisters and siblings, as trans friends alongside cis friends, who see our strength and join us in demanding the impossible. We need cis solidarity, but for our demands to work, we must formulate and make them as strong as possible. And to cis readers, there is an ultimatum here. It is not ours, but a fact of our situation. Surrender apathy, or consciously give up on the continued social existences of trans people. Transphobes have clarified that dynamic. In the words of arch-bigot Helen Joyce, we are in our mere existence a huge problem to a sane world. We have no place in the reality they are bringing into being. Only cis people can decide if they accept that reality. For as trans folk, there is no remaining us in that future. At this moment of crisis, we should say clearly, we mean to take everything from them. Because everything is already ours. A reading of the article, Cass Means Social Murder, a statement on the Cass Review by Transmission and Anti-Capitalist Resistance, that is available to read on the Anti-Capitalist Resistance website. Transmission and Anti-Capitalist Resistance respond to the recent Cass Review to unequivocally condemn this assault on trans youth and trans people in general. We loudly insist that every socialist, every member of a left-wing political party, every union member, become involved in the fight back for trans liberation, making bold demands in the struggle, shoulder to shoulder with our trans sisters, brothers, and siblings. We demand the complete repudiation of the CAS review, full healthcare access for trans youth and adults on a co-productive basis, trans-inclusive ban on conversion therapy that acknowledges that transition care is not conversion therapy, and that conversion therapy includes all excessive weights for this healthcare and any form of medical gatekeeping, i.e. making care dependent on diagnoses of gender dysphoria. CAMHS to receive emergency funding to bring it up to standards befitting its role, and to be reformed also on a co-productive basis. Non-binary, inclusive, universal, non-medical self-ID. The final report of the CAS review was published on the 10th of April, 2024. If you paid attention only to most of the British media and Westminster, it was an uncontroversial assessment of healthcare for trans youth. Unfortunately, treacherous responses from Stonewall and Mermaids lend credibility to this fiction, as they needlessly conceded ground and compromised trans safety to this concerted attack. Stray an inch from this anti-trans bubble, another picture emerges. Many organisations have raised deep concerns, including Trans Safety Network, who called alarm bells on this report long before its publication, Transactual, Amnesty and Liberty, the UCU Women's Standing Committee, Neurodiverse Connection, Therapists Against Conversion Therapy and Transphobia, Equality Australia, and the Professional Association for Transgender Health, Aotearoa New Zealand. These global charities, professional bodies and unions are joined by campaigning groups and trans voices like Growing Up Transgender, Trans Plus Solidarity Alliance, Transgender Action Bloc, and the Dyke Project, which has spoken out with the just rage of trans people and friends. Services for trans youth have always been plagued by chillingly unacceptable waits and appalling standards of care, worsened by the closure of the lamentable Tavistock Gender Identity Clinic for children, and the withdrawal of puberty blockers following the earlier publication of the CAS Interim Report, a callous act that has now been cemented. Going forward, access to life-saving gender-affirming treatments will be even more severely restricted. If they exist at all, they will depend on children submitting to unethical studies that coerce participation at the threat of withdrawing healthcare, no basis for any research. And the private sector also comes under scrutiny, closing off all alternatives to desperate trans youth. Moreover, this decimation of inadequate provision could be extended to people as old as 25 or older, as the NHS has menacingly pledged a follow-up review on adult transition. The problems with the CAS review are legion. Trans people were excluded from its research oversight board, reminding us of the Disabled People's Movement's slogan, "Nothing about us, without us," and its wider value for the oppressed. This unacceptable exclusion, under the pretext of moving from a social justice approach to an evidence-based one, then plays through in the report's explicit bias against trans existence and flourishing. Some of those involved in the review have lobbied against trans-affirmative healthcare or for conversion therapy. These are the so-called experts on whom CAS draws. There are also allegations CAS collaborated on a similar anti-trans review developed by hardline far-right US governor and anti-trans politician Ron DeSantis in Florida, as well as communicated with the Catholic Medical Association member Patrick Hunter as he worked on the discredited Florida Review. At the core of CAS's work is a blanket dismissal of the quality and efficacy of the evidence in favour of gender-affirming care. This is based on controversial standards not applied to other fields of paediatric medicine. Conversely, against such impossibly high tests, hearsay and anecdotes become enough to justify any and every anti-trans viewpoint. For example, detransitioning is raised as a concern, But this is not even backed by the review's evidentiary research, which found a mere 10 detransitioners in a sample of over 3,000 patients. At one point, Cass strays far from her typical appearance of credibility and makes the appalling and poorly evidenced argument that gendered toy preferences might have a biological basis. Such crude essentialism must worry anyone who considers themselves a feminist and rejects the reactionary belief that biology is destiny. In typically circular reasoning, Cass cites people becoming trans adults after puberty blockers as evidence that the blockers made them trans. Likewise, she claims being trans is linked to mental health conditions, an idea rejected by relevant bodies in psychology. She speculatively delegitimizes neurodiverse trans people's agency, again, based on concerns and correlations, and resurrects, albeit unnamed, the long-discredited pseudoscientific idea that trans identities are a social contagion, i.e. rapid-onset gender dysphoria. It is on such shoddy grounds that Cass is willing to recommend extraordinary attacks on the autonomy of trans youth. She goes so far as to suggest medicalizing social transition, implying that children might need a doctor's approval to go by a new name, adopt new pronouns, or wear specific gendered clothing. But the problems in the Cass review are only secondarily methodological. These faults have a prior basis in transphobia. At the core of the Cass review is the notion that being trans is inherently undesirable, and that the worst outcome for a trans child is to become a trans adult. This assumption is pervasive, insidious, and dangerous. Trans existence must be celebrated if trans people are to be safe. Mere tolerance, always half-hearted, has brought us to this grim point. Tolerance is not only insufficient, it is poison. We remember Jason Pullman, Charlie Millers, Alice Lippman, and others who have died while receiving inadequate, dehumanizing treatment on the NHS. Trans life needs to be embraced and welcomed, not begrudgingly accommodated. Transition should give joy to our society, not be met by mourning as though someone had died. Trans flourishing should be perceived as necessary for cis flourishing, not as a challenge. The source of trans suffering is not being trans, but being oppressed. A trans member of ACR testified to the reality of this suffering. Quote, "We suffer a lot. Our rates of depression, suicidality, and more general mental illness are a measure of our shared trauma at how we are abused, not who we are." The Cass review recommends treating the symptoms of transphobia whilst perpetuating transphobia. It does so knowing that this treatment is unavailable in the current context of the wider mental health crisis, and especially the appalling state of child and adolescent mental health services, CAMHS. This rubs salt into the wounds of trans people. The premise of Cass's approach is to treat the prevalence of mental health problems amongst trans people, especially but not exclusively young trans people, not as an indication of trans collective trauma due to oppression, but as evidence that being trans is pathology. We are back to the days when homosexuality was considered a mental health problem, trans edition. Through this report, Cass has become the single most dangerous transphobe in this country. Without a concerted fight back, her nakedly trans-hostile approach will completely undermine youth access to healthcare and other support. It also has negative ramifications for all trans people across Britain and indeed beyond. ACR calls for this review to be repudiated in its entirety. We demand complete healthcare access for trans youth and adults on a co-productive basis that stresses queer bodily autonomy. We make demands on this government through motions from campaigning organisations and labour movement bodies. We also note that it is shameful that the Labour Party, increasingly portraying themselves as a government in waiting, has prematurely accepted Cass's findings. It will be essential to get health unions, but also education unions, to take up this fight and adopt the general principles here to their particular circumstances. Every education worker is aware of the precarity of the lives of trans young people and of the disastrous state of CAMHS. And all workers in both sectors know that the impact of the years of austerity means that services they want to deliver, are employed to deliver, are at breaking point. Many are deeply frustrated at the failure of Labour in opposition to commit either resources or vision to change the situation. CAS means the choice of cis society to tolerate and even encourage trans death, whether through malice or apathy. CAS means that trans lives cannot be said to matter in contemporary Britain. CAS denies bodily autonomy to trans people in parallel to the ways that women's bodily autonomy is denied, particularly through attacks on their reproductive choices. CAS means the social murder of trans people. Our alternative, to rewrite another tried and tested slogan, this time of the Women's Liberation Movement, no trans liberation without socialist revolution. No socialist revolution without trans liberation.